everyone made it through the deep freeze, right? Everyone's still healthy and the city's still functioning. We're not shut down in, like, Texas.
Barely. Our old little house can barely take it.
Yeah,
Texas is crazy.
Ugh. Yeah, a pipe burst at my parents' house and it was upstairs in the kitchen and it destroyed the new room that we just remodeled.
Oh, no, that sucks.
Yeah.
That's where you were today, helping fix that up?
Yep. Jeez. Just trying to help. It's mainly just clearing the room out.
I can't believe I never experienced that in my, when I was living in Minneapolis and it was negative 30 out and we're living in like a 1930s, 1940s house. I guess it just got it nice and insulated.
Yeah, but they were also built.
Yeah, for those extreme
temperatures. Yeah, they're built different because they're expecting that.
Yeah.
Texas houses are not built like that.
Not quite.
Oh, I got something else interesting. I got a hamster.
You got a hamster.
Gigi got me a hamster for Valentine's Day. His name's Dennis. Dennis Raider.
Dennis Raider.
Well, joke's on you. I have two hamsters.
Should I be getting hamster? Am I like, out of the loop here? Is hamsters the new thing?
I don't know. I just wanted one. And Gigi got me one.
I didn't want one, but Carly wanted one.
Old Dennis Raider.
As a, your cat is going to eat that hamster.
Ours are Ricky Bobby and Cal Naughton Jr.
I'll stick with dogs for now.
Alrighty.
Well, congratulations on your hamster.
I might have to take him out of here.
Oh, he's in the room?
If he starts squeaking on his wheel. He's sleeping right now, but if he gets up and starts squeaking on the wheel, I'll get him out.
Good deal.
Just hear this.
All right.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Unsolved Dimension. I'm one of your hosts today, Adam. Alongside me is Isaiah.
What's going on, everybody?
And Jamin.
This week we are diving into a murderer. It's going to be a new topic for us, and I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a dark one.
It was murder.
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 Well, our story this week is going to begin with an urban legend that you may or may not be familiar with. It's called The Hook.
The Hook.
Captain Hook.
So here we go. Open up your imagination. Just pretend you are around a campfire or it's 2 a.m. and you're 11 to 12 years old and you're at your buddy's place and you're all telling scary stories. And
is there mallows?
There's some hot mallows. Golden brown.
Oh, baby.
And then your buddy pulls out the old legend of the hook. The year is 1972. Austin and Judy were 17 years old and on their way home from a nice evening out. Austin decided to make a stop at one of his favorite secluded locations known to the teenagers in town as Lover's Lane. They arrive and begin to enjoy the view while playing a little bit of soft music through the radio. A storm moved in and it began to rain. Suddenly, the radio stops and a broadcast announcer begins to read a message in an urgent tone. This just in, a convicted murderer has just broken loose from the Staten Island Asylum. If anyone near the location sees a strange man walking around, they should keep their distance and report to authorities immediately. The escapee is aggressive and his right hand has been replaced with a hook. That is all. Just as soon as it started, the broadcast ended and the music was back. Austin and Judy sat there for a moment listening to the music and soft rain hit the windshield of the car. They both knew that Lover's Lane couldn't have been more than 2 miles from the asylum. Judy became worried, but Austin shrugged it off. He had other things on his mind.
Jeepers creepers! That man could be out here! I'm scared! Maybe we should call it a night!
Chill! See, all the doors are locked and we're perfectly safe?
The couple tries to go about their business, but then Judy thinks she hears something outside of the car.
What was that?
Babe, don't be such a spaz. I didn't hear anything.
No, I know there is something out there.
It's the forest, of course. There are animals and things out there. It was probably just like the storm.
Without warning, they hear a crack of thunder and a faint bang. Judy became frantic.
No. I'm bugging out. Take me home. I don't want to be out here anymore. Let's blow this taco stand.
All right. We'll keep on stepping. No need to go bananas.
The two left Lover's Lane, and Austin drove Judy home. Once they arrived, Austin got out of the car and walked around to open Judy's door. When he looked down, he was shocked by what he saw. There, hanging on Judy's door handle was a bloody hook.
Oh, Lord Jesus, it's a hook.
Oh my gosh, dude. There's a hook, and it's bloody.
I remember hearing the story a long time ago.
Yeah, I do too. I think
used to creep me out.
I want to say there's a...
Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
I remember back in the day, I had that book, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. And Jamin, you might remember this, but we were on a baseball trip. Like, I think it was in Kansas City, and all the baseball team, we had a hotel room at, I think it was Great Wolf Lodge. And like most of our parents came, my parents were chaperoning, and I had that book and my mom was reading the story with the coins in the eyes, and she gets into it really deep, and we're all just kind of like, oh, what's going to happen? And then she like freaking yells. She's like, you have my coins. Scared the shit out of all of us.
Yeah, man.
My mom still remembers that.
This is along that...
Steak.
What is that?
It's clawing my fucking door.
I says, currently flipping off his cat, really showing him a lesson.
So, Jamin, what about Staten Island?
Now, this story, we all know it as The Hook, but in Staten Island in New York, they tell a similar version of the story, but the escaped mental patient is known by the name Cropsey. Cropsey didn't prey on horny teens. Instead, his preferred victims were children, no older than 13 years old. Parents would tell their kids the tale of Cropsey to keep them out of the various abandoned buildings around the island and away from the forest in the center. It was believed that the mob would use the small lakes and the dense forest to hide bodies back in the 70s and 80s, so anything to keep the kids out of the way of the mob was strongly encouraged, so that's where this was a widely known story throughout the area.
Huh.
This is kind of like the situation last week with that. The guy telling him, don't go over there because of this legend. It's like, doesn't this make the kids want to go there and explore it more because of these tales?
I would say so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would definitely probably do that.
Kids are stupid. Reverse psychology is the best.
I'd still do that.
Absolutely. I'd say there's a facility. If we ever visit New York, we're taking a trip to Staten Island to check out this place. But we'll get into where that is and what's the history behind it. Now, all of these stories were just urban legends until children started to go missing. From 1972 through 1987, four children went missing and sparked panic throughout Staten Island. 1972, 5-year-old Alice Pereira vanished after her brother had left her alone in a building lobby for a moment. 1981, 7-year-old Holly Ann Hughes went to the store to get a bar of soap with her friend, but Holly was never seen again. 1983, 11-year-old Tahisi Jackson was reported missing after her mother sent her to purchase food and she never came home. 1984, Hank Gafforio didn't return home one night. Hank was 22 years old but reported as being slow, and it was believed his IQ couldn't have been above 70. 1987, Jennifer Schweiger was 12 years old and born with Down syndrome. Jennifer's disappearance was the last straw for the residents of Staten Island. A massive manhunt ensued. Thousands of people searched for the little girl for 35 days. Then, everyone's worst fears were discovered. A man came across an area of disturbed soil next to a makeshift campsite outside of the Children's Insane Asylum. Police excavated the body, and it was confirmed to be Jennifer Schweiger.
You, said four children earlier, but that was five.
One of them was 22 years old.
Yeah, it doesn't count.
Not a child.
Not a child.
Okay.
Survey say? Adult. Let's talk about the Children's Insane Asylum for just a moment, because that is one of the key elements that will bring everything together. All right. I'm just going to warn you guys before we get into this. If this gets dark with mental illness, they didn't really take it that seriously and didn't really have time for it back in the, it's really the 40s to the 80s.
I always thought this was an urban legend. I had no idea that this was like kind of based around some real shit, but we're about to get more deep into it, so I'm pretty freaking excited.
Willowbrook State School is what this wretched place is called. The location could house up to 4,000 patients, and in order to be admitted here, you needed to have a medical disorder so severe that the courts ruled you needed assistance to perform the most basic tasks. Brushing your teeth, eating, using the toilet, getting dressed, all those would grant you access into this school. But it wasn't a school. It was an insane asylum.
School for the gifted. It's like X-Men, right?
Right. The school opened in 1947, and by 1965, they were housing over 6,000 children, 2,000 more than their estimated max capacity.
Holy shit. That's a lot of freaking kids.
And they all have severe disorders that need help and assistance. At the time, it was the biggest state-run institution for people with mental disabilities in the United States. Living conditions were awful. Senator Robert F. Kennedy visited the site and called it a snake pit, and said the children were living in filth and dirt, their clothing in rags, in rooms less comfortable and cheerful than the cages in which we put animals in a zoo. The senator made a few recommendations on how they could improve the facility, but no change occurred, and things continued to worsen. And that was, I believe, 1964. Now, we're gonna back up just a little bit into the 1950s, when a hepatitis outbreak spread throughout the school, causing a majority of the children to get hepatitis A. This led to controversial medical studies carried out by researchers Saul Krugman and Robert W. McCullen. Questionable tests with gamma globulin were performed, and once the public started to find out about what was happening, the two researchers were kicked out and a new doctor was brought in to help. The school contracted Saul Krugman to help with the hepatitis epidemic. I'm sure this guy will help save the children, right?
He sounds like a nice guy.
I mean, he can't screw up any worse. It sounds like it's already pretty bad.
Yeah.
When Krugman arrived, roughly 90% of the children were already infected by hepatitis. At the time, it was known that hepatitis was caused by a virus, but they didn't know how it was spread, whether it could be prevented, or how many types of viruses cause the disease. Krugman used the children of Willowbrook to answer these questions. One of his known experiments involved feeding a live hepatitis virus from a stool sample to 60 healthy children. Krugman observed as the healthy children's skin and eyes turned yellow and their livers got bigger. He watched them vomit and refuse to eat. All 60 of the children fed hepatitis became ill and some nearly died. Krugman justified his actions because he figured they'd probably get it anyways. By the time Krugman left in the late 1970s, it was believed that 99% of the patients in Willowbrook had contracted hepatitis.
Ew.
In other words, he did not help at all.
He fed them poo?
He fed them infected poo.
Ew.
Because it's spread through contaminated food or water or contact with someone who is infected.
Yeah, so that just shows how dirty this whole place was when 99% of people are contracting this virus.
Huh.
According to vaccinologist Maurice Hillman, they, and by they he means the Willowbrook studies, were the most unethical medical experiments ever performed on children in the United States.
Wait, was it hepatitis A or B?
It was A that was the main one that was spread, but it was just every bit of hepatitis going through that place.
Hepatitis B is like through sexual contact.
And that will actually inflame your liver and cause yellowing of your eyes.
Yeah, because physical, sexual, and psychological abuse was a common occurrence. So every type of hepatitis is being spread around, and these children didn't have any kind of voice to complain or argue with it. They were forgotten by society.
Huh.
Some of the more rambunctious children would be strapped to a bed or chair for days at a time. We may never know the true extent of the horrible things that took place there. In 1972, an undercover documentary was shot by reporter Geraldo Rivera called Willowbrook, The Last Great Disgrace. And that's something that you can look up if you want to see what that looked like. And I watched it. It's horrifying. They are children laying in their own feces in dark rooms, just shaking back and forth, completely naked. And they're all over the place, shoulder to shoulder. And it looks like a foreign prison camp.
Dang.
Thanks to this film, it led to a class action lawsuit in 1973. A legal battle began in 1973, and the facility was officially closed in 1983. During the class action lawsuit, Willowbrook lost most of its funding, and the majority of its buildings were closed, causing a surge in homeless people to occupy the area. One homeless man that lived there in the area was a former Willowbrook janitor named Andre Rand.
Sounds like we had like a Holocaust with these kids.
It was something kind of like that. The Holocaust was definitely worse, but...
Yeah, do we know, like, is this place still open?
It closed in 1983.
Like, can you still visit the...
Oh, the facility? Asylum. The buildings are still there.
We should go check it out. I wonder if there's a ghost adventure thing on it.
I'm sure it's probably haunted, but there are some stories and legends surrounding the building that make you maybe not want to visit it. I mean, once it started to close down, then the homeless people, like I mentioned, just started to move in swarms. So
I'm gonna have to check it out. I want to see, like, if you can visit it.
I can fight ghosts. I can fight aliens. But if there's a strange man chasing me in the woods, that's my deepest fear. That's what I'm like. That's the line I'll draw.
I just want to see the facility. I bet it's creepy as shit.
Absolutely it was. It was kind of one massive complex in the middle and then either 4 to 6 buildings, smaller buildings surrounding it. I mean, it has to house 4,000 people comfortably and up to 6,000 people.
Well, yeah, most of the pictures I saw too were in like black and white, so it was even like creepier.
It's called Willowbrook, right?
Willowbrook State School.
Willowbrook Asylum. I want to see some pictures of this bitch.
So, Jamin, who is Andre Rand?
Well, when Andre was 14 years old, in 1958, his father died and his mother was institutionalized at Pilgrim Psychiatric Center in Brentwood, New York. Andre and his sister were left to fend for themselves at a very young age. And that'll screw a kid up.
Yep.
In the mid-1960s, Andre was in his early 20s when he was hired as a custodian, orderly, and physical therapist at Willowbrook State School. Andre was believed to have performed some of the heinous acts of sexual and physical crimes against the children housed at the school, but nothing was ever proven in court during the closing of the school. And who hires an uneducated 20-year-old? I get it if he's the custodian or the janitor.
But like a physical therapist? Come on.
And an orderly? Like, I thought you have to have some kind of, like, maybe a high school degree or something. I don't think he even graduated high school.
I mean, an orderly is just, like, helping them change and go to the bathroom and stuff. So that's less
and giving them medications.
Concerning to me. But the physical therapist part?
Yeah.
Little weird. A little concerning.
Back then, you could kind of be, like, whatever you wanted to do, too. Like, without school, I feel like.
Yeah, there was a lot more like, just, you got 2 working hands.
Well, and a place like this. I don't think they were verifying much information.
That's true.
Yeah.
If you can keep your mouth shut, they would hire you.
So what was Andre even proven of doing wrong? Like, did he do anything wrong? And why is he even being included in the story about Cropsey?
Well, that's a fair question, because so far it seems like I just picked a random janitor to talk about in this asylum. Or, I'm sorry, state school.
Yeah, that's kind of my point.
Yeah. Well, it turns out in 1971, Andre drove a school bus to a local YMCA and parked it next to the entrance to the building. When a group of boys were leaving the building, Andre invited the kids on and said he would get them all food and drive them anywhere they wanted to go. The kids got on, not thinking much about what they might be getting themselves into. Andre got them food and then drove them to the Newark Liberty International Airport in the state of New Jersey. None of the children were harmed, and Andre spent 10 months in jail for kidnapping. I watched an interview with one of the kids once they were all grown up, and he made it sound like Andre didn't really have a plan and just got in over his head with a school bus full of kids. Because, he probably filled the school bus up and drove to the airport and said, great, now I'll just fly down to the Cayman Islands and we'll all land on a private island and create a society there. Oh, wait, I don't have any rich people to help build that with. So I think he just failed a whole Jeffrey Epstein plan.
Doesn't really sound like the best plan.
No, he didn't think that through whatsoever.
Hey, airline, I have 50 kids with me. Can we all fly down to the Cayman Islands?
But this was in 1971. They might have just been like, if you can buy them tickets, who cares? Sure. And they were all like African-American kids. So it's like, hey, these 15 black boys are my children. We would like 16 tickets to Columbia, please. So, yeah, didn't really have a plan until the parents started calling the police and reporting their kids as missing. And so he's like, yep, I have them. We're just going for a little trip to the airport for fun.
I got a funny story. So we went to Costa Rica.
And I was kidnapped.
For a family vacation. And we were like trying to think of things to do. And we ended up going to this reptile/amphibian like zoo. And we get there and the owner of the place, he was like straight up New York freaking dude. Like
that's
had
weird.
The accent and everything.
Not what I'd expect.
Maybe it was, I don't know. I can't tell the difference between a New York and a Boston.
Maybe Boston? Like,
Was she some kind of Ashton?
I don't know. What? It was one of the two. He must have been like, I don't know if he was a criminal or whatever, but he was like, yeah, I got these reptiles and stuff. You guys can come look at them and stuff. He's like, that's a reptile you can touch, and that's a reptile you can't touch.
Don't even look at that reptile.
It was just strange.
He sounds kind of Boston to me.
He might have been Boston.
But he also had a little New York in him. So
yeah, I don't know. I can't tell the difference.
I'd need to hear it from the source.
Yeah. Maybe we can go to Costa Rica and check it out. It was cool.
Yeah, I'll just go down real quick.
It was a cool little zoo.
I bet that would be.
Was the Tiger King there?
It was Costa Rica. No,
were there
Oklahoma.
Any cages and were all the animals just like in a big open basement?
No, they're all in glasses. But it was kind of sketchy. Okay. It was kind of sketchy looking.
As if they were trying to kidnap you.
Just all this New York talk made me think of him. Yeah, I'm the reptile guy. You could come and look at our snakes and stuff.
Some days I wonder how he's
doing. I started to hear a little Russian in there.
Come touch my snake.
We got the vodka and we got the snakes.
Come put my pail on. Okay, well, for this action, Andre was given 10 months in jail for kidnapping 15 kids. The 70s. What can I say? Now, within a month after Andre served his 10 months, the first victim of our missing children took place. 5-year-old Alice Pereira went missing. Andre was the prime suspect for this disappearance due to his previous criminal record. Because there was no evidence, the police had nothing concrete to pin on him, so the case went cold. The same situation took place when it came to 7-year-old Holly Ann Hughes, 11-year-old Tyhese Jackson, and 21-year-old Hank Gafforio.
Pretty sure you said he was 22 up there.
Yeah.
22. The documentary said he was 22. The internet says he's 21. So I'm just going to mix it up throughout and keep things fresh. Though some believe they saw Hank and Andre eating breakfast in a diner the morning of the disappearance, no one could say for sure that that was them. Andre was the prime suspect in every missing person report involved with children in Staten Island because of his criminal history. So I think the cops are just lazy. And watching the interviews, I'm very confident the cops were lazy. Like, hey, we got anybody that likes kids over here? Like, oh, this Andre guy, he tried to take like 15 of them. That's our man.
Let's get some donuts.
Let's go get some donuts, boys. And they're exactly like what you would assume a New York crooked cop to look like and act like. That's every interview I've seen with those guys.
Well, yeah, it just sounds like they kept trying to pin the same crime on this dude until one of them stuck.
Exactly. That's kind of what it sounds like. Now, it wasn't until the final disappearance that any actions were taken. After the 35-day manhunt for young Jennifer Schweiger, they discovered her remains buried next to a makeshift campsite outside of Willowbrook. The community believed that the campsite was owned by Andre Rand. And during the investigation, witnesses came forward and said that they saw Jennifer walking with Andre on the day of her disappearance. The location of the body and the eyewitness testimonies were enough to bring Andre to court. Andre was staying at a church's homeless shelter when police apprehended him. So they finally were able to find some screwball way to get this guy arrested.
I like how it says, or the community thought he owned the campsite.
Exactly. Because he's homeless. They found this campsite out there and they're like, it's probably Andre's. He likes kids.
But it's not like, oh, it was just his camp. Like, he was just staying there. No, he owned it. That was, his plot of land.
And it doesn't even look, it looks like the most makeshift thing, like a little box spring in between two trees and then some old newspaper scraps.
Seems like a good campsite.
What happened to Myra?
Myra?
Myra Maines.
That was the worst joke I've ever heard you say.
And this has been our favorite segment, Zingers with Zaya.
Did you just think of that?
My dad told me that a long time ago.
Myra.
All right.
So, whatever happened once you got apprehended?
Well, it kind of went exactly how you'd think it would. In 1988, Andre Rand was accused with kidnapping and first-degree murder of Jennifer Schweiger. The Staten Island jury could not reach a verdict on the murder charge, but convicted Rand of first-degree kidnapping. He was sentenced to 25 years to life in prison, but would be eligible for parole in 2008. Or, at least he would have been. But in 2004, he was charged with the first-degree kidnapping of 7-year-old Holly Ann Hughes in 1981. The friend that Ann went to the store with testified against Andre in 2004 and said that Andre pulled up in his Volkswagen and threw Holly into the car. Others came forward and claimed to witness the same situation. Andre was found guilty of first-degree kidnapping and sentenced to another 25 years to life. He is still alive to this day, but won't be eligible for parole until 2037, when he will be 93 years old.
Dang.
So they got him. He's the evil man of Staten Island, has been captured, Cropsey's no more, and the world is a safer place. Right? Are you convinced, Isaiah?
No. Well, I don't believe it.
You conspiracy nut. How dare you say the court system is flawed and this man may be innocent? What is wrong with you?
He was creepy looking. He looks crazy.
He's creepy looking and shy, but very well written. He doesn't speak a lot. The funny thing that he does is he keeps screwing over reporters and police that come to talk to him. Well, I think he has to talk to the police, but where he's being kept is pretty off the grid.
Mm-hmm.
He gets a dialogue back and forth with letters, a little pen pal with the reporters or documentarians. And so he's like, okay, I'll have an interview with you. And then they drive all the way out there, get to the prison. And then every single time they get turned away and they're like, he didn't want to talk to us. So he's just toying with everybody at this point, just for fun. They'll drive all the way out there, think they're getting an exclusive interview, and then get turned away.
I'm trying to think who he looks like. He kind of looks like Mr. Beans.
I could see that a little bit.
Mr. Legume.
But when they found him, or the photos that they got of him are him of like drooling and looks like he's just drugged up and maybe the CIA tried some truth serum on him or something. I don't know. He's just weird.
Some MK Ultra shit.
Mind control.
Maybe. Who knows?
Shit, maybe the asylum people fucked with him too. Also, not just the kids.
There's a chance. Maybe they were testing on their own doctors. Who knows? All that I know is that place is a dark part of the U.S. history.
It's really glum.
Here's some of the theories that we gain from this story. Some people believe that the alumni from Willowbrook still roam the area and live in the tunnels under the abandoned facility where they operate a child trafficking ring, and Andre helped supply the kids. So that's a pretty dark theory and one that makes me maybe not want to go explore this place. I mean, the whole area is made up of numerous buildings and they're all connected from underground tunnels. So that's very creepy.
Yeah.
Another option or another theory that's come out is that Andre was a Satanist and used these kids for ritualistic practices. This one, I never found any basis on, and it even brings in more questions since they found him in a church where he was staying when they captured him, and he's never done anything really satanic with the kids, as far as I've read and researched. But this is one of those things that the cops pulled up just completely out of their bum, and they just love throwing in there, where it's like, well, you know, maybe he was part of a Satanist cult. It's like, whoa, do you have any kind of evidence that you're saying this from? No, I've heard stories about sometimes these guys like to murder kids and have blood sacrifice. It's like, what are you talking about? Where?
Yeah.
When have you ever seen that?
When...
Yeah. And same with the...
No evidence.
The housewives that they go and interview, they're doing that same thing. They're like, oh, I bet it's the demons. I bet they're summoning these demons and murdering children. It's like, what are you... No more daytime television for you.
Yeah.
Some theories also think that Andre was not guilty of any of this, and the real killer is still on the loose. And the more and more I dig into it, he might be guilty of one of these, but to be guilty of all of them, I'm not sold.
Yeah, seems... I don't know. Without any other concrete evidence about any of them. Like, you'd think if he was guilty of more of them, there'd be something in one of the others.
Yeah.
I don't know. His plan was to take kids in a bus to the airport. That doesn't seem like the kind of guy that would be smart enough to get away with all of the others.
Numerous kidnappings and murders.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like, I don't know if back then, like, forensics and stuff were like as good to really like know. I feel like if it happened nowadays, like they'd be able to find something, you know?
Well, yeah, they would be able to use security cameras from these places and they would be able to do forensic reporting and see if there's any DNA on these, on the body that they recovered or even the campsite that was there.
But then again, you don't, I feel like you don't have, things are more regulated now too, like with, like even working at an asylum, like not saying there's bad doctors at these asylums, but because I'm sure there are that treat them shitty, but I'm sure it's more regulated now and you have people keeping up with it better than it was.
I mean, that's yeah. where, look at those specialists they brought in to help with the hepatitis thing. They just started, as soon as they got in there, yeah. they just all started experimenting on these kids. So it's,
it was the CIA.
The morality of the doctors back then kind of come into question. But then again, nowadays we're benefiting from the research and discoveries they made. So it's like, well, do we want to be as advanced as we are with medical, or do we want to take the moral high ground and say that everything they did was bad? It's a big debate that we don't want to get into.
Oh, yeah, we'll put a pin in that and circle back.
That's like what the Nazis did with the Jews in the concentration camps.
It's a situation that's just very tough to discuss without sounding like an absolute monster.
So, Jamin, are we ever going to know the truth?
The reality is we may never know the truth. And to this day, parents of Staten Island still use the legend of Cropsy to try and keep their kids from wandering too far at night.
Did we ever figure out why they call him Cropsy?
Someone broke loose from the insane asylum and its patient name is Cropsy, and he would take the kids.
All right. So if you guys want to give us a follow on our social medias and interact with us on there, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at The Unsolved Dimension.
If you want to send us an email or open up a dialogue, you got any questions, you got any episode ideas, you got any questions about our old episodes, you can always send us a message directly through email at theunsolveddimension@gmail.com. We'd be happy to open up a dialogue with you.
Also, if you guys want to get on Apple Podcast and leave us a 5-star review and a comment, we will give you guys a shout out on our next episode.
Totally.
So you can catch us totally next time on The Unsolved Dimension.
The Unsolved Dimension. All right, you beautiful people. We'll see you on Monday. Enjoy Peace. Your week. Enjoy your drive. Stay safe out there because Cropsy's coming for you.
He's going to hook you. Hook you into me.